W263 AI Murfreesboro. W270 AF Murfreesboro.
WGNS Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's place to talk. Stand by, Rutherford County. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. I am your host for today's broadcast. We appreciate WGNS airing this program, and we thank you for listening. During today's broadcast on our Call to Conviction segment, we will review a trial from the past. The trial involves the murder of Tina Stewart, which occurred in March of 2011. Tina Stewart was a star basketball player for Middle Tennessee State University. Her murder and the trial that followed attracted national attention. It was broadcast live in its entirety on local television and was also made available worldwide on the internet. No trial was ever followed more closely by more people in Rutherford County than this one. Because of the community interest in this case, today's entire program will be devoted to the Tina Stewart case and dedicated to her memory. To discuss this case, we are honored to have in the WGNS studios today two very special guests. From the Murfreesboro Police Department, we will have Sergeant Mike Taylor. Sergeant Taylor was the lead investigator on a team of law enforcement officers who successfully investigated and solved the murder of Tina Stewart. Sergeant Taylor will tell us about the investigation and provide background information regarding the case. And we are very pleased to have with us today one of the experts who testified in the trial itself. Jerry Finley will offer expert insight regarding the blood evidence found at the crime scene. Jerry Finley's expert testimony provided valuable evidence which helped to convict Tina Stewart's murderer. We welcome you to the program, and we thank you for listening. We will begin the broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Hello, this is Peter Demas with Demas's Restaurant, a family restaurant tradition for four generations, now in our 24th year, serving our most popular menu item, great-tasting oven-baked chicken soup. Back in 1989, when my mom and dad were planning Demas's, they debated whether baked chicken soup should even be on the menu. Both agreed that it was a good item, but they weren't sure it would be accepted. Because my dad and his sisters had eaten it all of their lives, especially when anybody had a bad cold, they decided to risk it. They did it, and now I can say the rest is history. We made over 65,000 gallons last year and make more every day. We sell it by the cup, bowl, quart, or gallon. You can even freeze it for shipping or to save it for a later date. Give yourself a treat today. Baked chicken soup, buy it in the store, or get it to go. Demas's Restaurant in Murfreesboro, Lebanon, downtown Nashville, and Hendersonville. Get your chicken soup today.
Bell Jewelers, celebrating 135 years. In the late 1800s, Bell Jewelers was originally called William R. Bell & Son, which began as a jewelry and optical store. In fact, the fitting table for eyeglasses is in the middle of our store today. Bell Jewelers, voted the favorite jewelry store in Murfreesboro. Bell Jewelers, on Broad Street, across from Toots.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City, and I'm inviting your family to come do business with our family. Fall is a beautiful time of year to sit outside and enjoy your serene garden pond, and here at Animal City, we have all of the things you need to make that dream a reality. Here at Animal City, we know the importance of feeding your pets an excellent quality diet to protect their health, so we stock a variety of premium foods for your family pet. Animal City is located at 919 Northwest Broad Street here in Murfreesboro.
From call to conviction, time now for a look back at one of the more intriguing and important cases for this community. From the crime, the investigation, to the prosecution.
In the fall of 2010, Tina Stewart was a student at MTSU. She was a member of the Lady Raiders basketball team and the apartment mate of Shanterica Madden. However, the two were not always the best of friends. In the late afternoon of March 2, 2011, Shanterica Madden was on the MTSU campus with a female friend. The two young women decide to walk to the Raiders Crossing Apartments, where Shanterica Madden and Tina Stewart shared an apartment. Shanterica Madden and her friend were going to the apartment to smoke marijuana. When Madden and her friend arrive, they thought that Tina Stewart was not there. But Tina Stewart was there. She was in her bedroom with the door closed. Madden and her friend smoked the marijuana in Madden's room. And from her bedroom, Tina Stewart smelled the marijuana. Being on the MTSU Lady Raider basketball team, Tina Stewart knew that being around marijuana could jeopardize her scholarship. At about 5:35 p.m., Tina Stewart calls the apartment management to complain. Management then calls their courtesy officer, who is an off-duty police officer. The officer arrives and asks Shanterica Madden if he could search her room. During the search, the officer locates a small marijuana roach in the ashtray. He tells Miss Madden to flush it down the toilet. No charges are placed and no arrest is made. The officer then speaks with Miss Madden outside, and then he leaves. At approximately 6:45 p.m., the Murfreesboro police receive an anonymous call. The caller tells police that they need to go to the Madden and Stewart apartment. The police arrive shortly before 7 p.m. As they pull up to the apartment building, they observe a male chasing a female on the apartment grounds. They discover the male is Tina Stewart's fiancé, Casey Anuna. The female is Shanterica Madden. Later, the police go inside of the apartment, and there they find Tina Stewart lying on the bedroom floor, stabbed to death. Tina Stewart was 21 years old at the time of her death. She suffered four distinct injuries that night. Her least serious injury was a laceration to her left arm. She also had a stab wound to her back and another stab wound on her neck. The most serious injury was a stab wound to her chest. That wound actually cut her aorta, which is the main artery leading to the heart. The wound also pierced Tina Stewart's lung. This injury caused Tina Stewart to bleed to death. That night, Shanterica Madden was interviewed by Detective Mike Taylor of the Murfreesboro Police Department. At first, she denied even being present when Tina Stewart was killed. She tried to cast suspicion on a man with dreadlocks, a man that she said was mad at Tina Stewart and had been in the parking lot earlier that night. Later, she changes her story. She finally admits that she had stabbed Tina Stewart, but claimed it was in self-defense. Following the interview, Shanterica Madden was charged with the first-degree murder of Tina Stewart. When we return, we will tell you about the trial of the state of Tennessee versus Shanterica Madden.
Get the latest local real estate information, lawn and garden tips, and more Saturdays at noon on the Rutherford Home Show with Dean Higbee and Dave Grover here on WGNS.
At the Salvation Army Family Store, you can get bargain prices on clothes, furniture, household goods, electronics, and more. Here's store manager Mark Sheridan.
We do pride ourselves in trying to put the best furniture out that's available to us for a reasonable price. There is a date on the furniture tag, and every 10 days from that date, 10% comes off the price until the item is sold.
The Salvation Army Family Store is at 125 South Front Street, across from Captain D's on Broad. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m.
Weather Eye.
We'll see a few scattered showers here for this afternoon with cloudy skies, a high into the upper 70s. With northwest winds at 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusting as high as 20. I'm WGNS meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Right now, 66.
Play it again. Play it and then trade it in. You get more for your money when you play it again. Play it again, sports.
Play it again, sports on Thompson Lane.
The trial of State of Tennessee versus Shanterica Madden began on May the 9th, 2012. The trial was presided over by the Honorable Judge Don R. Ash. Shanterica Madden was represented by Joe Brandon Jr. and Lori Young of Murfreesboro. The prosecution team consisted of District Attorney General William C. Weitzel Jr. and Assistant District Attorneys J. Paul Newman and Sheila Fries. Because of all the pretrial publicity, the jury had been selected from Chattanooga and brought to Murfreesboro to hear the case. The trial lasted 5 long days. The jury heard from 47 witnesses, and over 200 exhibits were introduced during the trial. The defense argued that Shanterica Madden was not guilty. They insisted that she acted in self-defense, and they asked the jury to set her free. The state argued that Shanterica Madden was guilty of first-degree murder, that the murder was an intentional and premeditated murder. They asked the jury to convict Shanterica Madden and send her to prison. After hearing the attorney's arguments, the jurors began their deliberations. On May the 14th, 2012, after little more than an hour of discussion, the jury returned to the courtroom with their verdict. The jury found Shanterica Madden guilty of murder in the second degree and guilty of tampering with evidence. On July 16, 2012, Judge Don Ash sentenced Shanterica Madden. Judge Ash sentenced Shanterica Madden to the maximum sentence for second-degree murder, which was 25 years at 100% to serve. On the tampering with evidence charge, Judge Ash imposed an additional 4-year sentence. That 4-year sentence was ordered to be served after completing the 25-year sentence. The effective sentence was a total of 29 years. Under this sentence, Shanterica Madden should not be eligible for parole until the year 2038. With us today in the WGNS studios is Jerry Finley and Sergeant Mike Taylor. Mike Taylor was the lead investigator in the case. Jerry Finley was the expert witness whose testimony helped cast serious doubt on Shanterica Madden's version of how Tina Stewart was killed. It was Jerry Finley's testimony that helped persuade the jury that Shanterica Madden was not acting in self-defense when she stabbed Tina Stewart and left her alone to die. Jerry Finley is an expert in crime scene reconstruction and blood pattern analysis. Mr. Finley, we want to welcome you to Murfreesboro, and we want to welcome you to the broadcast.
Thank you for having me here.
To start with, can you tell us what a crime scene reconstructionist does?
A crime scene reconstructionist analyzes the evidence recovered from a crime scene, analyzes the crime scene, the autopsy, and takes all of that and puts it together into the sequence of events that took place within a crime scene.
And can you tell us what type of information and assistance can an expert in blood pattern analysis provide to the law enforcement officers to help them investigate the case?
Well, in a lot of cases, when you have a statement, there's some parts of it that you may or may not believe or is not consistent with the evidence. So therefore, the blood pattern analyst and the reconstructionist can put together the types of things that are in the statement that are true and the types of things in the statement that are not true based on the physical evidence and the crime scene itself.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and especially about your prior law enforcement training and experience?
I've been involved in forensic investigations for close to 41 years now. Started out with the Chatham County Police Department in Savannah, Georgia, and was there as a forensic investigator. When I retired from there, I went to work for the state of Georgia in the Department of Public Safety as the supervisor of forensic science and death investigation training for the state. I began consulting outside of that in 1980 and have been consulting as well as teaching ever since.
In your current capacity, I know that you wear multiple hats. You offer your services as an expert witness, and you're in great demand to speak at law enforcement training seminars. Can you tell us approximately how many trials have you testified in as an expert witness?
154.
And can you tell us in what different states have you testified, or how widespread has your testimony been?
Well, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, as well as Texas and Colorado.
And I believe that we have used your services previously in this jurisdiction on a couple of occasions as well, have we not?
Oh, that's very true, yes, sir.
I first met you several years ago when you taught a week-long one-man blood pattern analysis seminar at the Murfreesboro Police Department. Can you tell us how it was that we were fortunate enough to get you to come to Murfreesboro?
Well, I teach for the Institute of Police Technology and Management at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, and one of the officers from Murfreesboro attended one of the courses down there and asked me if I would be willing to, if he could get it approved, to come to Murfreesboro and teach the same course up here, which I agreed to, and he got it approved, so came to Murfreesboro and taught the first course. That's when I met you.
And I think in that first course, I attended that, and during that particular course that you were teaching, we actually brought over some genes that was used in the Cal Gilley case.
That's true. Yes, sir.
And as I remember, you examined those, and we had you look at them during a lunch break.
Yes, sir.
And from that, you were kind enough to take those and further examine them, and then come back to Murfreesboro and testify in the trial.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
How many times have you offered training seminars to law enforcement officers in the state of Tennessee?
15 to 20 times all over the state, Knoxville, Murfreesboro, Nashville, Memphis.
Jerry, I want to ask you about the Shanterica Madden trial, and I'd like to talk to you about what evidence the district attorney's office asked you to examine.
The reconstructionist needs is all the information that we can get in terms of the physical evidence, but I was asked to examine the crime scene photographs, the autopsy report, the crime scene investigation, the crime lab reports, to see if it would be consistent with the statement given by Ms. Madden.
Can you tell me approximately how much time do you really have to spend examining and closely looking at all this evidence before you can come to an opinion?
It takes a while, depending upon the case. In this particular case, probably I spent about 40 hours just analyzing it, because you have to dissect it, look at each piece of evidence recovered, look at each photograph minutely, inch at a time, and you have to put all this together. You correlate the injuries with the blood that's at the scene, and then you compare all of that with the statements at line by line to determine at what point the person is telling the truth or what point that they're lying.
I know that a small spot of blood can actually tell you a story about what went on. Can you tell us some of the things you can determine from looking at a blood spot or a blood pattern?
Well, blood pattern analysis is a study of the size, shape, distribution, and location of the various types of stains. And due to research and in the publications and so on, we know how these stains are created. So by knowing how the stains are created, we can then determine, okay, was this person standing, sitting, were they lying, was the perpetrator close to the victim, not close to the victim, and so on. So by looking at the stains and determining the angle, direction, and location, it can tell us an awful lot about what transpired at that crime scene.
And I know that all the listeners are familiar with Dr. Henry Lee, and I know that you're familiar with him as well. Can you tell us about your meeting with him?
I've taught on the podium several times with Dr. Lee. Also taught at the University of New Haven, his Forensic Science Institute up there, assisted him up there. But I've known Dr. Lee for years, and we've corresponded on numerous occasions. I've also taken courses under him in Connecticut and so on. So Dr. Lee and I go back a long way.
Okay. Now, in Shanterica Madden's statement, she said that she acted in self-defense, and that she first stabbed Tina Stewart at the front of the bed, which was located close to the doorway entrance. Concerning that part of her statement, what did your findings show when you examined the physical evidence?
Well, that part of the statement is wrong, is not consistent with the physical evidence that's at the scene. The actual stabbing of through the chest, and there was a struggle, the stabbing through the chest was actually done over by the desk on the wall next to the trash can, which is on the opposite side of the room from the door in the foot of the bed.
Can you just walk us through what your examination of the crime scene indicated was the sequence of events as to what happened?
Well, there was an altercation, and there was a struggle. This is based on the additional injuries to Ms. Stewart, and that she was backed up into the corner in an upright position, not on the floor, as stated by Ms. Madden. She was backed up into that corner by the desk, and where she received the fatal stab wound and possibly some of the other injuries, which was totally across the room from what Ms. Madden said in her statement.
And I understand in Ms. Madden's statement, she originally said that she was holding the knife up in front of her and that Ms. Stewart walked into it, and there was only one stab wound. Can you tell us what you looked at to determine whether or not that particular statement of one stab wound was true?
Well, look at the autopsy report and the autopsy photographs, which showed additional injuries, and there was, I believe, on the back of her left shoulder, there was another superficial wound there, a stab wound. Also, the cast-off from the knife itself was located over by the desk and the trash. So there was a struggle. However, it was not a struggle where Ms. Madden was on the floor and Ms. Stewart was above her and so on, because when she was stabbed, the cast-off stains and all on the other side of the room.
Jerry, it's my belief that because of your findings, the jury had substantial reasons to believe that Shanterica Madden's version of how Tina Stewart met her death was not true. I know that, as an expert, you just simply put out the facts and let the jury decide. Can you tell us how you're able to maintain your impartiality?
Well, you have to be impartial, and you follow the evidence. You don't put in your feelings into any of this. Basically, I don't read the statements until after I have finished all my analysis and have gotten the information I'm going to get and put together a sequence of events, and then I will read the statement. Therefore, that keeps you objective and neutral. And when I testify in front of the jury, I put the facts out. This is what the evidence shows. This is, and if it's contrary to what the suspect says, then the jury has to make that decision as to who they believe.
Jerry, the audience may not know, but you are a major reason that another murderer is in prison. I'm talking about Cal Gilley, who was tried and convicted of the murder of Laura Salmon, which was our first cold case. Laura Salmon was another MTSU student that was killed, and her killer was not arrested for over 20 years. Can you tell us what you were able to determine when you examined the evidence in the Gilley case?
As you referred to earlier, the blue jeans that we examined the first time I was up here, there were two pair of blue jeans found at the scene. One belonged to Ms. Salmon, the other belonged to Kyle Gilley. And Mr. Gilley's statement said that basically he had left them in her car and that they were thrown on the body after fact, and he wasn't there. But the impact stains on the front of the clothing of the blue jeans around the knee area, impact stains on the side of the jeans, again around the knee area, and impact stains on the on the back of the jeans said somebody was wearing those jeans at the time, because the impact stains have to be created within where the perpetrator or the wearer of those jeans just has to be close to the point of impact at the time of impact. And so in looking at the jeans, and of course the scene itself, looking at the jeans, was able to determine that he was wearing those blue jeans at the time. They weren't just left in the back of the car where somebody picked them up and threw them out on the body. Now the actual incident started in her car and continued around through the on the drive there, the road, And then he drug her into the field where he beat her in the head and then moved the body again further into the field. So all of that taken together, we were able to put together a sequence of events that took place, and particularly as regarding the blue jeans.
Jerry, I know there's been several television shows that actually cover the Cal Gilley case, and I'll have to say that they didn't give you the credit that you deserved in those shows. I believe, personally, that your testimony about the evidence in those jeans was the most important testimony concerning the physical evidence of the case. I do not want to take away in any way from the investigation of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office to include Detective Goodwin and Sharp, but your testimony was very impressive.
Well, thank you. If the agency doesn't do a good job in the first place, then I really have very little to work with. So I have to commend the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, the investigators, particularly Dan Goodwin and Bill Sharp, for their work on the case and the original work that was done way back 20 years prior to that. Because if the scene is not documented properly, if the evidence is not recovered and collected properly and analyzed properly, then there's really very little I can do. So they did a great job on that.
Jerry, I want to personally thank you for helping bring closure to the Laura Salmon family and also bringing the heavy hand of justice to Cal Gilley. Before I let you go, I know you just completed teaching at a cold case seminar at the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, and you have participated in several cold case investigations. Can you explain how a cold case investigation is different than a fresh homicide investigation?
Well, in a cold case, you're going to have certain limitations depending on how well, as I mentioned, how well the scene is documented, the evidence is collected and preserved. In a lot of cold cases, the evidence gets lost, misplaced, it's not analyzed properly. Now, with a fresh case and the things that we can do today, if the evidence is preserved properly in a cold case, then you can have additional tests run such as DNA and with all the national databases that we have, like the APHIS or fingerprint database, the DNA database, and NIBIN, which is a firearms database, all of those things really help as far as today's cases go. But if the evidence is not really preserved well from the older cold cases, it makes it difficult. And another thing is that a lot of times the cold cases are picked up by a detective that was not at the original scene, so they don't have that personal observation in looking at the scene and being able to tell what transpired there. So cold cases are difficult, and you do have limitations. However, with a fresh case or a current homicide case, then you have the advantage of all of these things at hand if it's utilized.
Jerry, I always encourage law enforcement to attend any of your seminars, and I understand that you're about to do another seminar, and can you tell us a little bit about that so that any officer who's listening can look into coming and learning from you?
I think it's October the 20th. I'll be back in Murfreesboro. We'll be doing the crime scene reconstruction course, and it's a very good course whether you're a reconstructionist or an investigator, because it breaks the crime down into manageable parts. So I would encourage people, if any officers want to attend that, to contact Greg Wasson with the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, and you can talk to him about it.
Okay. Jerry, it is an honor to know you. You are a friend of crime victims and their family. You are a friend of law enforcement and a friend of mine. And perhaps more importantly, you are an agent for the truth. We wish you a safe trip home, and I look forward to our next case together.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me here this morning.
We will take a break, and when we return, we will talk with Sergeant Mike Taylor of the Murfreesboro Police Department.
Financial Coaching Radio, weekdays 4 to 5. Rutherford County's place to talk.
Have you recently thought about building a new sunroom, maybe a screen room or a patio cover? Maybe new columns or new railings at your house? How about new shutters? What about gutters, flooring, windows, and exterior doors? A lot of people upgrade their exterior door, and it makes the whole house look totally different. Some people update their garage door. Change the garage door, again, changes the appearance of the whole house. What about remodeling your kitchen or your bathroom or your outdoor living area? These are all things that Home Building Products in Murfreesboro can help you out with. Home Building Products is at 300 West Castle Street, again here in Murfreesboro, and they have more than 150 years of combined experience. Thousands of homeowners are very happy customers, and they've been in business for nearly 50 years. They've helped both myself out, Scott Walker, and also Bart Walker here at the station many times. Go to Home Building Pro, that's homebuildingpro.net.
Struggling to keep up with your kids, finances, and insurance? Let me, State Farm Agent Michael Busey, help you simplify and get to a better state. My office is next to Kroger on Las Casas Pike. You can also visit buseyinsurance.com. When you let me handle your auto, home, and life insurance, you'll have more time for everything else. More money, too, because adding State Farm policies could mean earning discounts worth up to 40%. That's money that you can use toward a college savings plan. Call me, State Farm Agent Michael Busey, today and get to a better state with State Farm. Visit buseyinsurance.com.
What's in a dream? It's different for everyone, and that's where your neighbors at Wilson Bank and Trust can help you. As your local hometown bankers, our kids go to school together. We see you at church, out shopping, we get to know you, and we're here with a loan to help you reach your dreams. I'm Barry Buckley, Southern Regional President of Wilson Bank and Trust, inviting you to allow us to help you reach your dream. Wilson Bank and Trust, still here, still independent, still committed to you. Wilson Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
This is the voice of the Blue Raiders, Chip Walters, on Rutherford County's home for MTSU sports.
The Blue Raiders on WGNS, AM, FM, online.
We now welcome to the WGNS microphone Sergeant Mike Taylor of the Murfreesboro Police Department. Sergeant Taylor was the lead investigator in the Tina Stewart case. It was through his efforts and the efforts of a team of law enforcement officers that Shanterica Madden was arrested, prosecuted, and convicted. Sergeant Taylor, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks, Jay Paul. It's a pleasure to be here.
Sergeant Taylor, I know there were many officers who worked on this case. And can you take a minute and tell us some of the names of the many officers who helped you bring this case to justice?
Yeah, this really was a collaboration of officers. Really, the whole department worked on it at various times, but there's a few people that I would like to mention. First, Detective English, who was a patrol officer at the time, responded to the scene. She was one of the first officers on the scene and immediately attempted to render first aid. Also, the crime scene unit that worked on this case, there was lots of evidence that was collected that really helped in the prosecution. And that team was led up by Sergeant Henderson and Ed Gorham, Sergeant Mongold, and Detective Von Pock D. Also, Sergeant Keaton helped with the search of that scene, helped locate really some evidence that helped in that conviction.
Sergeant Taylor, this case was solved what I call rather quickly. I think you made the arrest that same night. Was there a specific time in the investigation that you knew who killed Tina Stewart? And do you remember that?
Well, initially when I got there was a lot of people on the scene, a lot of witnesses, and the first thing I wanted to do was try to sort through and figure out the relationships of those individuals, who was going to be witnesses, who was going to be potential suspects. And it really wasn't until I started to put together those relationships and see how all the pieces of the puzzle fit that I could start understanding what had happened. And then once I started interviewing Shanterica Madden, I was also getting some information from the crime scene, and it was pretty obvious to me initially in that interview that she was being deceptive and was not telling the truth about what happened. So it was pretty early on, I think, when I started to develop her as a suspect.
When the police arrive at the apartment complex, they see Tina Stewart's fiance, Casey Anuna, and he is chasing after Shanterica Madden. Can you explain to the audience why Mr. Anuna was pursuing Shanterica Madden at that time?
Well, Casey and Tina, they had a pretty specific schedule that they kept. As being athletes and being pretty busy, they kept pretty tight to that schedule. And earlier in the evening, Casey had sent a text message and had attempted to get in touch with Tina and was unsuccessful. And one of the key elements that we'll get back to is that Casey actually received a return text message from Tina's phone saying that she was about to get into the shower. Casey was starting to get concerned because he hadn't heard talk to Tina, so he actually went to the apartment, and he made mention that when he was pulling up, he could see through Tina's bedroom that her television in the bedroom was on. When he goes into the apartment, Shantarica stops him at the door and tells him that Tina is not there. He's concerned enough that he doesn't believe her story, goes past her, goes to the bedroom where he finds Tina lying on the floor. He immediately goes back to Shantarica because he knows that she was not telling the truth, and that's when she fled from the apartment. He gave pursuit after her. The whole time he was chasing her, he was yelling for someone to call the police.
This case was very well investigated, and as I've said, we had over 200 exhibits of evidence that were introduced. Can you tell us about some of the evidence that pointed the finger of guilt at Shantarica Madden?
Yeah, there was a lot of evidence collected, but there were several pieces of evidence that, in my mind, were very key to the case. Not only were they key to the case, but they helped show Shantarica's mindset of what she was thinking and where her priorities were. And we'll go through a few of those pieces of evidence. I think probably, to me, one of the key pieces of evidence was Tina's cell phone, which should have been found on her or in her bedroom, and was actually found outside of the bedroom on the couch in the living room. And we had a witness that said they had seen Shantarica with Tina's phone. Going on from there, the murder weapon, which was a broken kitchen knife, was actually found outside of the apartment, wrapped up in a Tinkerbell blanket that belonged to Tina. And those items were in a garbage bag located in a dumpster on the property, along with two additional matching knives. And these were like steak knives that would be located in the kitchen. And our crime scene people did a fantastic job at going back, looking at the apartment, and were able to find in the dishwasher some steak knives that match those found in the dumpster. Additionally, like I said, the blanket that we know belonged to Tina Stewart was found in the dumpster. There was a towel located outside in the parking lot that had blood on it and had Tina's DNA located on it. These pieces, when you start putting them together, really show that the efforts that Shantarica was going to try to cover up what she had done. And then aside from the evidence, the physical evidence that we found at the scene, there were the statements that she made herself regarding what had happened. Initially, she said that there was an altercation between the two of them, a verbal altercation, and that she was leaving the apartment to cool down. She also said that Tina was leaving the apartment. And she said that since she didn't have her keys with her, she didn't bother to lock the door. And that as she was leaving the apartment, she noticed a black male, she described with dreadlocks, that was acting suspicious in the parking lot. She mentioned that she had seen him before and that he had come to the apartment and was asking for Tina. But it was obvious in her statement, and combining that with the evidence that we found at the scene, that that just didn't happen. There was no way that that could have happened. And again, going back to some of the evidence that we found, and putting that together with a timeline, it was pretty easy to see by looking at that timeline how long had transpired, how much time she took to try and cover this up and try to dispose of this evidence.
Now, concerning her statement, she told the first statement concerning dreadlocks, and then the man with dreadlocks, And then she told you a statement where she did admit that she did, in fact, have a knife in her possession and was the person who stabbed Tina Stewart. Can you tell us what version of events she gave on that?
Yeah, she did, after I confronted her with the story that she had initially told was just not going to be believed, and the problems with that story. She did admit to stabbing Tina. She said that she went to Tina's room to confront her about the police being called earlier in the evening. She said that Tina's door was locked and that she had to knock on the door to get Tina to open the door. She said that when she went into the room, that they had a verbal altercation. She admitted that she said she was, when she was leaving the room, that she bumped into or may have shoved Tina, which led to the physical altercation. She said that during this physical altercation that Tina was on top of her and that had knocked her to the ground, and that she reached to the top of the bed where she found the knife, and that she didn't know how Tina had gotten stabbed with the knife. Later, she kind of changed that story and said that when the stabbing took place, she was actually standing, and that she had the knife held up in front of her, pointed towards Tina, but at Shanterica's chest level, and that Tina came towards her, and that the knife stabbed Tina under Tina's own force at coming towards her. And going back and kind of what Jerry had alluded to earlier, when you go back and you start looking at the information available and you look at the autopsy report and the autopsy findings, the autopsy showed that that fatal wound to the chest was at a downward trajectory. And given the height difference between Tina and Shanterica and the version that Shanterica described, it's just impossible for that fatal wound to have been inflicted in that way. It would have been more likely that wound would have occurred from an overhand stabbing type motion.
Some of the most devastating evidence against Shanterica Madden came from her own statement and from her testimony in court. Can you summarize what Shanterica Madden said she did after she stabbed Tina Stewart?
Yes, she said that after the stabbing took place, that Tina fell to the ground and that she was lying there. She could tell that she was still breathing, lying on the floor of her bedroom in the apartment. And Shanterica told us that she turned the lights out in the bedroom, shut the door, and walked out of the bedroom. She said she had wet clothes in the washer, so she took those clothes out of the washer and she put them in the dryer so that they could dry. She made several phone calls to, I believe one of the phone calls was to her mother. She then made a phone call, or I believe it actually may have been a text message, to one of her friends, asking the friend to come pick her up as soon as possible. Additionally, she went on to tell us about Casey coming to the apartment, and she admitted to telling him that Tina was not in the room. She said that she didn't want him to find her that way. She also had told us that during the time frame where she was making these phone calls and waiting for her clothes to dry, that she went back and peeked into the bedroom and that Tina was still lying on the floor.
At any time did she say that she thought about calling for help, for someone to assist Tina Stewart?
No, she never, everything that she told us that she did after the stabbing took place was to benefit her. Nothing that she did was to aid Tina in any way. She made several phone calls, as I mentioned before, sent several text messages, none of which were to the police, none of which were to ambulance service to try to get any type of help to the apartment. Rather, all of her phone calls, all of her efforts were to essentially save herself and to try to get out of the apartment and get away from the scene.
I know that you worked very closely with the family of Tina Stewart. I know you interacted with her mother, her father, and her sister, who all testified at trial. Can you tell us how difficult it is when you've got to sit down with the family and describe what happened to their loved one?
Yeah, it's probably the most difficult thing in this line of work that you can do. There's really, what you have to keep in mind is there's really nothing you're going to be able to say. There's nothing you can tell them that's going to change the events that's happened. The only thing you can do is be truthful with them, let them know that you're going to work, put 100% into it, and that you're going to put all your efforts on to making sure that justice is done and that they can have some closure. And really, by just sitting down and giving them the truth of what happened, that's about all you can do.
And I know that the MTSU community, President McPhee, the MTSU athletic department, and especially Coach Rick Insel and Tina Stewart's teammates played a vital role in assisting in this investigation. How much was their cooperation appreciated by you as the lead investigator?
Well, you know, it's all when you've got, this case was unique in that we had so much help on the case. By the media attention, things like that, the publicity the case received, unlike a lot of cases where we don't get as much help from the community sometimes, this case, there was just an outpouring of help from the MTSU community. And I think one of the things is this case involved, was unique, where it involved an MTSU student charged with killing another MTSU student. And the community, the MTSU community, really helped the witnesses. They helped the family understand that they weren't alone, that everybody was kind of going through the same grieving process. There was a lot of support from the basketball team for the family. And I think it really helped the family, helped to comfort the family to see just how many lives that their daughter touched.
As we end the program, we want to thank our guest, Sergeant Mike Taylor of the Murfreesboro Police Department, and a huge thank you to crime scene reconstructionist and blood pattern analysis expert, Jerry Finley of Finley Consultants. We appreciate WGNS providing the airtime, and we thank our producer, Scott Walker, for his help in making everything go so smoothly. Most of all, we thank all of the listeners. Our scheduled broadcast is Friday morning, November the 7th, between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m., when we ask you to tune in on your good neighbor station, WGNS.